Hello, this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, April 17th, 2026. We'll begin today's reading on the front page. Lincoln Square Theater, a seat for everyone. Matinee show suited for seniors with wider aisles, more lighting. With wide aisles, tables, and brighter lighting, dementia-friendly Decatur presented a senior-friendly matinee at Decatur's Lincoln Square Theater. It's held during the daytime, which is much more convenient for our older citizens, said Linda Little, coordinator for dementia-friendly Decatur coordinator, on Wednesday. Traditional theater settings might offer challenges for certain people, so the special accommodations are an opportunity to make them more comfortable, she said. Singing along and laughing out loud was encouraged for the 1954 classic musical, Seven Brides for Seven Brothers. It's very important that we keep our seniors and those with dementia, but seniors of all kinds, we want them to be active in the community and stay involved and feel like they're really contributing and having a good time, because nobody wants to just sit at home, Little said. And the photos here on the with the article is a large photo showing caregiver Amy Williams and Carol DeWeese are welcomed by Paw Print Ministries Comfort Dogs at Dementia Friendly Decatur's Senior Friendly Matinee at the Lincoln Square Theater in Decatur on Wednesday, April 15th. And these people are in the lobby, and there's the caregiver is holding the dog, or someone's holding the dog, and the caregiver is looking at the dog, and there's a woman there with a, they both have something to drink to go into the theater, and I see another woman in the background with a dog on a leash, too. And the smaller photo shows Chelsea Wickerson Spencer and Charlie Wood of the Carriages of Decatur assist Tanglewood Village resident George Fishbein to seating at the dementia-friendly Decatur senior-friendly matinee at the Lincoln Square Theater on Wednesday, April 15th. It's different, and that's what we need in Decatur, Fishbein said. And we see the caregivers, and there's a Mr. Fishbein is holding on to a railing and walking into the theater, or down the aisle of the theater. And then another photo shows Tammy Fowler of Starting Point welcoming people to the Lincoln Square Theater for a senior-friendly matinee of Seven Brides for Seven Brothers with dementia-friendly Decatur on Wednesday, April 15th. Also in state news on the front page, lawmakers debate AI regulations. This is from Capital News, Illinois, Springfield. As the artificial intelligence industry rapidly expands, state legislators appear poised to continue imposing regulations on the technology. Committees in both chambers of the Illinois General Assembly have heard bills that would implement various restrictions and give recommendations on the use of AI in state government and certain industries. The state already has some laws in place, but legislators' concerns about the harm AI may still be causing consumers. On April 9th and 10th, the Senate held two virtual subject matter hearings on nearly 50 bills about AI and consumer protection, privacy, education, and data centers. Senator Mary Edley Allen, Democrat of Libertyville, pointed to social media as an example of what happens when government does not place guardrails on new technology. If we got social media wrong, and we did, we cannot afford to get AI wrong, Edley Allen said. We will act on the lessons we have already learned. Or will we? That's a question, I guess. Will we act on the lessons we've already learned? She asked. Industry stakeholders recommended lawmakers let the federal government take control of regulating AI while acknowledging concerns about its impact. The president, however, declared via executive order in December that he is not in favor of broad AI regulations. AI advocates also recommended Illinois mirror other states' laws to prevent a complicated system from companies who operate in many locations. Our core concern is creating a patchwork environment, making Illinois a compliance outlier, said Jarrett Catland, state AI policy advisor at TechNet, a national technology policy advocacy group. We need to create clear incentives for responsible behavior without prescribing a one-size-fits-all compliance regime. The patchwork argument echoes the president's executive order, which declares that companies must be free to innovate without cumbersome regulation, and that state regulation thwarts this imperative. In the hearings, the senators emphasized that they did not want to hinder development and business in the state, but are deeply concerned about the lack of guardrails currently in place, particularly around chatbots and miners. This isn't about shifting innovation, but you need to have guardrails to protect miners, said Senator Sue Rezin, Republican of Morris. This bill is about ensuring that as technology moves faster than the law, we don't leave consumer protections in the dust, especially when it comes to miners. Current and proposed statutes. Illinois already has some laws targeting AI use in image manipulation and intellectual property, according to Andrew Cunningham, Senior Director of Government Relations for the Illinois Chamber of Commerce. And broader regulation can be applied to AI usage, as has been done to AI meeting tools under the Biometric Information Privacy Act. In many ways, our state laws are adaptive, and bad actors using AI or any technology irresponsibly are not operating without potential legal ramifications, Cunningham said in a statement to Capital News Illinois. Ketan Ramakrishnan, a Yale law professor, testified at the state hearings on the use of tort law to hold AI companies accountable. Tort is a branch of civil law that allows individuals to seek compensation from harm done to them by a company or individual. A lot of these early chatbot suits that you see are seeing being brought through the common law in various states, Ramakrishnan said. These absolutely are not enough. As these systems become more powerful, they provide essential basis for other laws that might be passed. During Senate hearings, lawmakers echoed concerns that these laws are not enough, especially when it comes to chatbots. They claimed the terms of service exempt those companies from being held liable for incorrect or harmful information the chatbots may share. Large corporations shouldn't be allowed to hide behind a computer algorithm, Rezin said. If AI gives advice that causes consumers to lose their life savings or suffer an injury, the company that deployed the AI must be held responsible. The Chamber of Commerce is also currently working with Illinois Department of Human Rights on implementation of a bill passed in 2024 that prohibits employers from using AI for recruitment, hiring, or other employment-related decisions in ways that could result in discrimination of a protected class like gender or race. Unfortunately, because rules have not been adopted to implement this act, despite a January 1st effective date, compliance and interpretation for business on such a new topic can be extraordinarily cumbersome, Cunningham said, adding that this is a good example of how new technology is difficult to regulate, and broad legislation can be difficult to implement. Outside spenders, economic interests. As lawmakers consider these regulations, industry donors spent millions supporting pro-AI candidates in the midterm primary elections, with mixed results in statewide and national races. And just before the primary election on March 17th, human resource professionals from across Illinois descended upon the Capitol to meet with lawmakers about the use of AI in business and employment. Illinois is one of 19 states in the country who started to try to regulate, to some extent, the use of AI, said Emily Dickens, Chief Administrative Officer for the Society of Human Resource Management. A growing number of businesses have begun implementing AI in daily tasks, from generative AI and marketing campaigns to AI programs that analyze large data sets. Cunningham said that while AI is playing an increasingly important role for businesses, its adoption is still in the early stages, with many companies navigating how to apply it. There is certainly growth in the hard and soft tech innovation sector when it comes to AI. But today, many small businesses are relying more and more on AI to compete in today's economy and expand their presence with limited budgets, Cunningham said. AI is also helping mid-sized and larger businesses with product development, cybersecurity, and tough fixes in our supply chain. Dickens emphasized that AI can be used to supplement work, but responsible use should recognize the necessity of humans. There's a balance between the innovation and making sure that you are not excluding people from the workforce who are talented and want the dignity of work. That's where HR comes in, she said. People will need a more nuanced and technical skill to use AI, Dickens said. It's the difference between going in with the whole Army and going in with the Navy SEALs. HR is what's been missing because HR has to hire. HR has to train, Dickens said. HR is right in the middle, and we are the connector to education and employment. While any proposed bills are still a long way from becoming law, lawmakers remain deep in negotiations with AI industry stakeholders. The question of whether and how Trump might impose his innovation first agenda on the states also remains. He revoked Biden-era AI policies within days of taking office in January 2025, but the Department of Justice has also made no moves to sue states for their AI regulations yet. With many conflicting interests, the path forward is still a long one. In more state news on page A3, state employees' health insurance costs up $380 million, growing Illinois workforce driving the increases. This is from Springfield. Health insurance costs are expected to take a bigger bite out of the state's budget and out of state employees' pocketbooks next year. Officials from the Department of Central Management Services told a legislative panel Tuesday they expect to see an increase of $380 million, or 9% in total costs, to the system in fiscal year 2027. That would bring total expenses paid by all funding sources to about $4.6 billion. That would be a slightly lower rate of inflation than the state has been seen in recent years. Costs increased this fiscal year by an estimated $402.8 million, or 10.5% over fiscal year 2025. That year was almost 15% higher than fiscal year 2024. CMS Director Raven Devon said the increases have been due to several factors, including growth in the state's workforce. Since 2019, she said, the state has added about 10,000 employees. She said the health plan now covers about 470,000 lives, including employees, retirees, and qualifying dependents. But Devon also cited general inflation in the healthcare industry as a contributing factor. Certainly, there's the general idea of inflation that we are all just fighting through as a country, she said. We can't quite point to one specific thing that has increased our liabilities. According to CMS data, the average cost per participant is expected to grow 8.3% next year to $12,051. That would represent a 45.7% increase over fiscal year 2018. As an employer, the state offers its employees a variety of different health benefit plans. They are funded through a combination of state funds, employee premiums, prescription drug rebates, and other miscellaneous revenues. The state's general revenue fund is the largest single source of funding, accounting for about 62% of the system's total revenues. That cost is expected to rise 12.8% to $2.8 billion in the coming fiscal year. Contributions from the road fund are expected to decline 10% to $155.5 million, while funding from university funds is expected to remain even at $45 million. Member contributions are expected to increase $30 million, or 4.9%, to $637 million. Member contributions make up about 14% of the system's total revenues. Premiums, which are largely a function of collective bargaining agreements, are expected to rise $8 per month for employees and $4 per month for all dependents in both fiscal year 2026 and 2027, the last year of the current labor contract. Youth Orchestra set for April 26 show. The Decatur Youth Symphony Orchestra and a select group of musicians from the Millikan Decatur Symphony Orchestra will be teaming up for a concert of symphonic music titled Side by Side at 2 p.m. Sunday, April 26th at the Decatur Civic Center. The free concert will include music from The Suite of Pulcinella by Igor Stravinsky, Aaron Copland's Variations on a Shaker Melody, as well as Symphony Concertante by Chevalier de St. George and others. The musical program is offered through the Millikan Preparatory Department for students in grades 6 through 12 from 20 schools in the Decatur area. Students audition for a place in the program. They meet on Monday evenings at Millikan's Kirkland Fine Arts Center. For more information on the Decatur Youth Symphony program or the concert, call 217-424-6358. Again, 217-424-6358. Or email nsmith@millikan.edu. That's N as in Ned or Nick, nsmith@millikan.edu. In more state news, on page A8, Illinois prison chief grilled after audit report IDs overtime pay spending concerns. Illinois lawmakers are fed up with the State Department of Corrections after another audit found it had ignored state spending rules and failed to fix many mistakes that have languished for years. The Legislative Audit Commission, a bipartisan commission of state lawmakers that reviews audits of state agencies, demanded answers from Corrections Director Latoya Hughes on Tuesday. An audit of her department in fiscal years 2023 and 2024 that was released in September revealed 40 shortcomings at the agency, making it one of the worst in the state. The department allowed employees to earn overtime hours while working during paid leave, violated state purchasing rules, and failed to maintain a list of paroled inmates who moved to other state facilities, according to the audit. I don't know why the two worst-run departments in the state are the ones that deal with lives of people. We're being fleeced, the taxpayers, Commission Co-Chair Senator Chapin Rose, Republican of Mahomet, said, "You're putting people's lives at risk." The audit revealed numerous problems that could cost the state millions of dollars or jeopardize public safety. There is literally nothing that you guys can say that I would believe, Rose said. And honestly, it's about the safety of people in the state and the safety of the men and women that work there. The commission did not vote to accept the findings of the audit, meaning the department will have to return an answer to answer more questions from lawmakers on their progress addressing the problems. Overtime pay. Auditors took issue with how the department allows employees to earn overtime. 80% of the employees reviewed by auditors recorded overtime pay on the same days they also received paid leave. Employees who took time off were still coming to work and getting paid for both their time off and having the hours they worked that day counted as overtime. Someone could take 37.5 hours or 40 hours, depending on what their schedule is. They could take a week's vacation. They could come in and work a four-hour shift, and that 4 hours would be paid in overtime, even though they haven't been in the office, asked Representative Amy Ellick, Republican of Godfrey. Hughes, who took over the department in 2023, and was confirmed by the Senate the month after the audit was released, said Ellick's assessment was correct and blamed the practice on DOC's union contract, Department of Corrections, union contract. Auditors wrote in their assessment that the problem has persisted since 2014 despite prior commitments from the department to address the issue. The Department of Corrections had a $2.1 billion budget in fiscal year 24, an overtime cost the state $150 million. The department is also behind the times on timekeeping. The department at one point in time did attempt to digitize the timekeeping process, Hughes said. They were unable to do so at the time, so that process is still a manual process. Purchasing issues. The department is also resorted to more frequently using the state's emergency procurement process, according to the audit, which allows it to circumvent the slower bidding process for contracts and purchases. The department spent millions on new vehicles through the emergency process in early 2023. It was not clear why all vehicles were purchased outside the normal bidding process. Department of Corrections Chief Administrator Jared Brunk said the department's vendor for vehicles wasn't able to make an order for vans through their contract, and the department made the decision to buy them under an emergency designation. The department also made a $692,640 emergency purchase for sliced bread in mid-2023, a product typically made by the department itself at Illinois River Correctional Center in Fulton County. Isn't it foreseeable that you need sliced bread to feed inmates? Rose asked. Brunk said DOC ran into a supply chain issue at the time and decided to purchase the bread instead. Public safety. Other revelations in the audit pertain to possible public safety issues. Auditors found the department did not have a list of people on parole or mandatory supervised release who became residents of state facilities run by the Departments of Public Health, Human Services, or Health Care and Family Services. More than 15,000 people are in the DOC custody on parole or supervised release, and the department is required to notify local police agencies when a person under those release conditions is living in their community. State law requires DOC to supervise sex offenders on mandatory supervised release and report to police agencies on their compliance with release conditions, but the department has failed to do so. In addition, some people in DOC custody were improperly labeled as violent sexual offenders despite having not committed such a crime. Alyssa Williams, assistant DOC director, blamed state's attorneys and courts for not providing enough information to help the department make a determination. It's sort of the ultimate irony that you're housing people accused of violating the state law, and then you guys are violating the state law, Rose said. Mail scanning update. Corrections staff also provided an update to a legislative oversight committee on a recently adopted rule that allows the department to scan and digitize incoming mail and books. The rule, which faced a pushback from families of those in custody and their advocates, was introduced following a number of illegal substance exposures in correctional facilities left DOC staff hospitalized. Critics argued mail scanning would intrude on privacy on those in custody and deprive them of the comfort that physical mail can provide. Some also said the department had not done enough to prove that exposures were coming in via the mail, and the rule would fail to improve safety for staff and those incarcerated. On Tuesday, the department released the first data comparing drug exposures before and after the rule change in a report to the Joint Committee on Administrative Rules, and critics of mail scanning say the data confirms their concerns. The data shows little change in the rate of exposures in the 6 months preceding and following the ruling, instead of showing an increase in total drug discoveries from 392 to 414. Discoveries in cells and on people also increased, with nearly 40 more incidents of in-cell drug discoveries made. The report also showed a slight decrease in mail discoveries and five fewer instances of alleged drug exposures from 133 in 6 months before the rule changed to 128 after. The numbers just aren't there to justify this amount of work and keeping the actual mail away from the people who are in custody, Representative Dave Vella, Democrat of Rockford, said. He asked DOC officials to explain the numbers and if they were exploring other ways drugs were getting into the facilities, such as through prison staff and visitors. Department of Corrections Chief Compliance Officer Michael Crum answered that the newness of the rule implementation could account for the trend, as contraband substances could have entered the prisons before the rule change and then have been found later. Crum also said that visitors and staff searches were of utmost importance and said it is certainly a multifactored approach, with mail being just one piece of it. To prison reform advocates like John Howard Association, this is confirmation that mail is not the primary way contraband enters prison. This underscores what has been clear from the beginning. Drugs mostly enter prisons through people who enter and exit the facilities, and until more is done to crack down on this problem, the problem will persist, JHA Executive Director Jennifer Volenkatz said in a statement. And the photo that accompanies this article shows Illinois Department of Corrections Director LaToya Hughes listening during a public hearing on Tuesday, November 4th, 2025, on a proposed administrative rule allowing the agency to scan inmates' incoming mail to reduce the flow of drugs and other contraband entering state prisons. Today in history, on this date, in 1964, Jerry Mock completed the first solo around-the-world flight by a woman, landing her single-engine Cessna plane in Columbus, Ohio, after a 29-day journey. In 1969, on this date, a jury in Los Angeles convicted Sirhan Sirhan of assassinating Senator Robert F. Kennedy. Sirhan's death sentence would be commuted to life in prison, with the possibility of parole. And in 1970, Apollo 13 astronauts James A. Lovell, Fred W. Hayes, and Jack Swigert splashed down safely in the Pacific 4 days after a ruptured oxygen tank crippled their spacecraft while en route to the moon. And that's all we have time for the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, April 17th, 2026. This is to Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.